Hey guys, welcome back to In Focus Out of Touch. My name is Sean Smith. Joining me is my co-host, Nicholas Kelly, over to my left. And joining us also is another Nick, Nick Lennox. He runs UDO Media, soon to be his own personal brand. That's interesting. We chat a little bit about that. And Nick talks a little bit about his documentary that he's working on about Fortitude Valley. And we speak a bit about, his way of creating things. He creates a little bit of his own music too. And we end this podcast going deep and talking about your why in video production. So join us on this episode of In Focus Out of Touch with Nick Lennox. Nick Lennox, thank you so much for coming to the Quasi Studio. We've had coming to 2 weeks in a row now.
I think it's that at that stage it's semi-studio.
Semi-studio.
I think we've past quasi and we're in semi.
Semi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Again, it's banter.
It's just banter.
This is but useless.
I'll stop
banter.
Being logical.
Anyway, thanks for coming along.
Cheers, guys.
Please introduce yourself and tell all the fine listeners and viewers what you do day to day.
Watch my shtick. Nick Lennox from UDO Media, but I'm actually 90% on doing a rebrand to either Lennox Media or Nick Lennox Media.
Yay, your just personal brand.
That's
in our book. I'll talk to you about that.
That'll be fun. Because part of the reason I actually started UDO with a friend, and it was sort of going to be a bit of a mix of marketing and video. And that's why we came up with a bit of, like a fun startup-y name, I guess. And it doesn't really make sense if I'm a one-man, but one-man band.
So, yes, it's mostly just yourself in UDO basically doing everything. Then you might sort of get contractors on.
Yeah, definitely.
Rock stars. Yeah.
And now that I'm white labeling a lot, it would be less confusing and I think better promotion for myself to be.
I can sort of empathize with that because I originally started with a company name, much like yourself. It was called Dead Serious Media.
Cool.
And I got to this point where I became really anxious with people not knowing it was me that was producing the things, and I wanted to put my name in front of there. And as soon as I started pushing my personal brand under my name, just exactly the same. Yeah. Got more white labeling and more opportunities come my way.
So for those just before we get too stuck in the weeds, like for those who don't know, what does white labeling look like for you, Nick? What to someone who doesn't do much of it, what are you actually doing?
I guess the most relevant example is I've partnered with a digital agency, and so they farm out all their video work to me, but we're also producing a documentary and eventually going to be doing our own spec ads. So that's all under Anchor Digital, and so even though it's my film work, it's easier for me to in the credits or the copy or whatever to be, shot by Nick Lennox or whatever. I think I'm going a little off topic, but that's basically what white labeling is. It's contracting under somebody else's brand.
So how did that relationship come about for you and Anchor Digital? How did you get that opportunity to just get all that work?
Through friends, really. Mm-hmm. It was through mutual friends. We met at a launch party for a different company.
Cool.
And just got chatting and really hit it off. And he'd been looking for a videographer for a long time. Somebody that sort of he wanted to really be able to gel with, and I guess have a certain style, which luckily he liked mine. So it was kind of quite fortuitous that I met him at that time. And they had pretty much just brought on a client that needed a lot of video work, so they needed somebody pretty quickly.
Nice, yeah.
That was actually that Interlate job that you helped out.
Right,
on.
Yeah, right, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Which we butchered.
I kind of erased that from my memory.
Yeah, I'm trying to as well.
We can talk about that.
Let's fill me in, guys.
No.
How'd you butcher?
We'll tell you offline.
It is a crazy story. Yeah. You know, there are some stories that you can absolutely go like, we can totally share that out.
And some you absolutely should not. And this is one of them.
Yeah.
A closed set.
I just want to wipe that from my memory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, that was the first job through them, and then it just sort of grew from there, and now I work out of their office, and it's sort of a bit of a trade system, so I get an office space for free and lots of gear for free, which is cool.
Nice.
And in return, I do all their marketing content and photos and things like that, so...
Video content.
It's a pretty good trade-off.
yeah. So it works really well for both of us, I suppose. Yeah.
That's great.
Very nice. Mm. So I find in this industry, you get a lot of opportunities and jobs just through the people you meet and say, like, someone might be fairly similar to you or have similar goals, and then you sort of link up. I can sort of relate. I think we have, like, sort of similar paths. I can relate. Because a lot of my work is just word of mouth, and I'd white label a lot myself too. So, like, how long have you been white labeling, and how's that all going?
Just over a year, I think. Yeah. So, I think me and Colin from Anchor met late last year, and then it's sort of really taken off. This year when they opened their new office space in the Valley. Very similar for me. I would say like 95%, if not more, is just through networks and friends and referrals and things like that, which is definitely the most economical way to do things, but it's usually the most enjoyable as well, I think. Yeah.
So Anchor Digital have invested in a fair bunch of gear, let's say.
Yep.
I was in the office yesterday and I saw just how
all the toys.
All the toys, indeed. Yeah. Very jealous. We definitely have a few gear nerds that like to listen as well. So tell us about some of the gear on offer. And I'd be interested to understand, like, it would be pretty rare for... Because you're not like an employee of this agency. You've kind of... semi-freelance to them and whatnot. So I'm really interested to hear, like, what's their perspective on video? Because why have they invested in not just some gear, like some awesome gear? So tell us about a selection of what's on offer.
What's on offer? I can't even remember. the main cam we use is the C200.
Yeah.
I can go into sort of why I decided on that camera.
Yeah, sure.
But I'll go through the list first. So C200... EOS R with Atomos for the 10-bit as a B cam. I did have a Sony, but I ended up selling that.
Yeah.
Ronin S, Easy Rig, 300D Mark II, 120D Mark II, Hazer, very important.
That's why you'll see all of Nick's talking heads just have this silky quality to them. You're like, how the hell do you do that? And it's just someone in the background, like, quietly ushering in some haze.
I started with a smoke machine, which works pretty well, but it usually doesn't hang around long enough, and it's too much, I think. Like, it can cause problems with a smoke machine.
It's just like someone's been vaping for 2 seconds.
Pretty much.
When you have the fire department rocking up every second shift.
Plus, a lot of people won't let you use a smoke machine as opposed to a hazer because of the residue. And because smoke machines aren't water-based, they will set off fire alarms.
Yeah, right.
Whereas a hazer is just water-based. Anyway, I digress. is that it? Gear-wise?
Pretty much. I mean, you've got
then all the peripheral stuff.
So is that stuff they already had when you went in, or is this stuff you said get this?
Some of it I already had.
Yep.
But basically, we've just been accumulating over the year, sometimes out of necessity, sometimes out of lust. But pretty much, I think what really, really started it is... me and Colin are both making this documentary together on Fortitude Valley. We've been shooting for just under a year now. And before we started, we, you know, we decided that we wanted it to look a certain way and look very professional, and with the potential to be able to sell to TV or sell to Stan or, you know, Netflix or something like that. Or not necessarily sell, but showcase.
Is it more something you'd want to make money off, or is this purely a passion project and you just want to get it out there?
It's a passion project. It's a really great way to showcase what we do, and also showcase the valley and the businesses there and the changes that it's going through, which is a pretty cool story to capture, and it's a pretty cool time in the valley that we're sort of trying to capture. So basically, our idea initially was nowhere near what it's now morphed into. It was quite small, quite manageable. It was just going to be a few little interviews with some key businesses around the valley. You know, sort of like, oh yeah, we'll knock this out in 2 months or something.
A year later,
season.
Yeah. Pretty much. So my original plan was to hire a cinema camera.
Right.
You know, either sort of a mid-range Red, or I think you can even get Arri's or FF7s pretty cheap. Well, FF7 at least.
Yeah, relatively
cheap. But when we started researching it, and then the extra gear we would need, it worked out better to lease some of our gear and just invest in the gear. So I think that's what kind of started it, is we're just leasing the C200, which I think is, regardless of where you're at, I think it's a good move because of the amount of cameras that are coming out right now and like how quickly they're upgrading. So leasing is a smart move for us.
Yeah, you almost have to invest in really top quality glass, as usual, but like cameras, they'll change every 6 months now.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And I guess your needs can change as well.
Yeah.
Which I've sort of learned over the past 3 years. So yeah, you're 100% right. I think lighting, audio and lenses are super important, and lenses are always going to hold their value.
Yeah.
I mean, I still prefer old lenses compared to a lot of the new stuff that's coming out. So, yeah, you're better off accumulating that.
Yeah. So walk me back to the conception of this Fortitude Valley doco. You mentioned that it was going to be something smaller, something manageable you might be able to do in 3 months. How did it become a year thing plus for you?
Partly through our own stupidity, just sort of not really planning it properly.
Yeah.
Also managing day-to-day work along the way.
Yeah, because
that's a challenge.
That was going to be a question from me, is like how this is this weird mix of, it is a personal project, you're invested in it, but at the same time you've got other responsibilities, and you might be working in your off time, but you also then do have a ton of client work that comes in, you know, probably on a regular basis. So yeah, how do you juggle that stuff?
I don't know.
Right. Still working that out as well.
Yeah. Generally working 7 days a week. I'm quite lucky in some ways because my girlfriend, she works 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So when she's out at work, I can get away with doing big hours and 7 days a week without sabotaging the relationship.
Yeah.
And she's very understanding and patient with what we're doing. So even when she's home, she knows that I have to put in some, you know, big days and things like that. I think it's also not making a sacrifice, but just making sure I'm not taking on too much paid work. Just enough to sort of keep things moving along and making sure that my business doesn't suffer along the way, which when you take on a big project, we were talking about this yesterday, is when you're in business for yourself, you really have to, I think probably, you know, 6 months, a year ahead. So it can be really exciting taking on a big project, and then you get to the end of 6 months and go, wait a minute, I haven't done anything, any work on the business.
Like, yeah.
What was the original question?
I can't even remember.
I think it was how it became such a bigger project than you were expecting.
Yeah. The main reason, which I'm very, very grateful for, is basically as we started meeting people and I guess showing a few previews of what we were doing and talking to more and more people wanted to be involved, which has been amazing. And then just, I guess, we're sort of learning as we're going as well. Like, I've never done an episodic big documentary like this before, and there's just an insane amount of footage that you need and work that goes into it. If it was just Talking Heads, we probably could have knocked it out in a couple of months, but we want it to be something really special.
Yeah. Cinematic.
Yeah. I've always been a fan of learning by doing.
Yeah.
If you just do something and put in all your energy into making that thing the best you possibly can conceive,
100%.
It's almost better than studying or getting someone else to teach you or going through a course.
Yeah, I actually was thinking about like what I was going to say on this podcast. Yeah. And that's something I really wanted to touch on because I think it's incredibly valuable, is I would encourage, if you can, I would encourage anyone to try and shoot a doco. Because the amount that I've learned this year that I don't think you could learn on normal jobs.
Yeah, especially thinking about all the different variables that come into doco.
Yeah.
If you can shoot a really great and compelling doco, you can commercialize your product, making tons of videos for money. So it's things like, you know, scheduling, shooting Talking Heads, cinematography.
Yeah.
The whole host of skills.
It's amazing how, because you certainly would have had some of your skills as a video producer inform how you approach the documentary, especially from, because we all, especially when you're out like solo shooting and you're managing the clients on your own, you do get to be your own producer and your own location scout, and like you naturally take a lot of this stuff on that you would then, when you're out shooting a doco, that would help inform that. So it's interesting that you actually said, I wouldn't have thought it would necessarily have impacted you so much that you're now thinking, well, when I then start bringing them back to into the client work, there's a lot more I've learned. So that's interesting.
Yeah, like, for example, I think a really great skill that I've maybe not learned but significantly improved on is you know, things like blocking or being able to assess a location really quickly.
Yeah.
So, because often we're just, it's so reactive and quick. And you saw yesterday, we had 2 hours to set up and we still weren't ready.
Yeah.
And usually I'm by myself and have, you know, half an hour to set up. So you've got to be really, really quick with how you're going to shoot it, how you're going to set it up.
Yeah.
How you're going to light it.
Yeah.
You know, the angles you want to use. So from doing this for over a year, I feel so much more confident now just walking into a new space and going, yeah, I know exactly how I'm going to shoot this and can see it in my head and then just quickly set it up.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, even last year, sort of, you know, be umming and ahhing and have to walk around and try some stuff and then, like, not be happy with it.
Yeah, you're questioning yourself. Yeah, throughout the shoot. Yeah. You just see, like, this other spot, and as you're filming, you're like, God damn it.
Yeah. God damn, I mean, that still happens.
Cup in the back.
yeah. That definitely still happens. But I find that's been really, really valuable, that skill, just to, especially for doco work, probably not so much for narrative stuff. But
sure.
Yeah. So what got you into filmmaking and video production?
I always... What's it been, like 3 or 4 years now? I used to work in mining construction for about 8 years, which was good and bad. It was never really me. I think, honestly, I was probably just doing it for the money.
Sure.
And it was sort of on a bit of a career path, and I thought, oh, yeah, you know, I can make a career out of this and be comfortable and yada, yada, yada. then towards the end of that career, I started a tour on two off roster. So have a lot of time off. And most people are working, so quite bored when you got time off. Yeah. And I'd always been interested in photography, but never, you know, got into it. And then I went on a trip with a mate who was quite into photography, and he sort of showed me the basics, and I just completely fell in love.
Right.
As soon as we got back to Australia, I bought some camera and some lenses, and any free time I had was taking photos.
Yeah.
And then from there, you know, just sharing random stuff on Facebook, people started asking me for family portraits and things like that, which was petrifying.
Yeah, I had that no first idea. $100 and a paid job.
Yeah. Well, I was like, what? I don't know what I'm doing. I don't want to come and take your photos.
I remember my first money for doing anything. It was a wedding.
Like, yeah,
for getting money for that. Like, what?
I can get paid for this.
I think
these
mine
people
was
must be crazy.
Mine was an engagement video.
Oh my god, that's brave.
And I was like, what's an engagement video? But like, they came to me and said, I don't know. I'd been making some like video or something for a company I was working for, just in like their comms team.
Yep.
I don't even remember how it happened, but like, I was doing that just on the side for free.
Mm.
And yeah, they came up to say, oh, we pay you to make an engagement video. So I had to get home and Google, what is an engagement video?
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah. Always say yes and then freak out later.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. So yeah, continue.
So from there, I guess I got more and more confident and started doing it more and more. And then probably maybe a year later, I was lucky enough to be made redundant.
Nice, congratulations.
Yeah, it turned out to be one of the best days of my life.
Yeah.
And then somehow walked straight into a job at a small coaching firm. I think you used to work there as well.
Yeah. That's our link.
Way back in the day.
Yeah, when they only hired Nicks.
Yeah, true that.
Yeah, I tried to apply, but you're Sean.
No, Sean, sorry. That kicked me out. And that was, I'd sort of dabbled in video, but I, like, complete rookie. I thought I was, from memory, I think I actually started trying to edit videos in After Effects.
Oh, wow.
Because I just didn't know. And, you know, I'd sort of watch a few YouTube tutorials and like, this doesn't make sense. Like, how do I cut this clip? It's really weird. And then, you know, slowly progressed and got onto Premiere and things like that. Actually, I think my first movie was on Windows Movie Maker.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Same.
Amazing program.
Yeah, it's just an awesome program. Yeah. Don't knock it.
Yeah. that the job at the coaching agency was editing a lot of videos and then started shooting a lot of videos, and it was a great opportunity to enhance my skills and learn things.
Yeah. So doing that, was that quite at a big volume for you? Was it a constant production schedule?
Yeah, definitely in the editing side of things. It was just nonstop editing, either internal or external videos. And through that, I was lucky enough to make a lot of contacts and sort of build up a bit of a portfolio, I suppose. Excuse me.
This was of promotional videos. What kind of style videos were these?
I'd say predominantly testimonials.
Yep.
Yeah. And probably like origin stories, like business stories and things like that.
Yep.
So through that, made lots of contacts and cut my teeth, and then decided to give it a crack on my own after about a year, which was terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it still terrifying to anyone else?
Still screams internally.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember back. So I think that was about 3 years ago, or maybe just under 3 years.
Wow.
It was only just managing to get by for the first year. But sort of just had enough to sort of tick along and made a lot of mistakes and tried things that didn't work and tried things that did work. then when I made it to 2 years, I was like, okay, this, you know, starting to grow, and I could feel myself improving and can feel a bit of direction here. And then, last year, meeting Colin from Anchor Digital, and then that's sort of been a real game changer, building that partnership and relationship. So even though, like, probably 70% of paid work I do is still my own, it's just having a space, having people to work with and excuse me, bounce ideas off, and I guess it's credibility as well.
Because
for the first 2 years I worked from home in a home studio, which is amazing, but I think it's quite dangerous. You develop bad habits and
you get into a bubble, which is exactly where I am now, because for close to a year I paid for it, like a share space near where I live, and like had a really shit end of year, so I was like, I just can't justify this is when Spencer was born, and so I was like, yeah, I'll just go back to working from home. And it's incredible how quickly you pick up bad work habits
because you're not around anyone. And underpants.
Yeah,
exactly. That's wrong. I just walked up to a client.
I'd do it.
Yeah, totally.
But so does everyone else up there. So
that's the outfit.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. Just like that, kind of brings us up to where you are now. So there's one skill set that you have that I think is pretty unique to a lot of other video producers. Mm-hmm. You are some would say a master of keys. Some would say a composer of things.
Do you make your own music?
I dabble.
Nick says he dabbles. I've got to say, so we all know how, like, if you're lucky, you can get some pretty decent royalty-free music. Shout out the Music Bed. Not yet a sponsor. But it's good. But it can be pricey, depending on your use.
Yeah,
there's some absolute shite out there for royalty-free music that we probably all hear very similar tunes that we've picked on client videos that then 2 weeks later we see on the TV.
Yeah.
Because some tight-ass production company's going like, client, we've got to pay $600 for this. And they're just paying $100 to license this bloody song.
Yeah, crazy.
But you do make a lot of your own music, and you have in the past, I don't know if this is current, but you have in the past applied that skill into the videos you make for clients. I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Why did you even start to do that?
Again, probably out of stupidity. I think for the first 2 years, every piece of music in any video I made was by me.
Every single piece.
That's so cool. Yeah.
Wow.
It's cool, but
a lot of work.
So time consuming.
I can picture you with like a little MIDI keyboard at your desk. Like,
yeah.
And then that goes into Premiere Pro. You got a little thing there.
Pretty much. It's really, really, really fun. Like, I was a musician before I was... That was my first creative outlet. I call myself a musician. I don't know.
A busker.
So that was, like, my first love, I suppose. So I think maybe not so much anymore, but the way that I guess I... not learnt to edit videos, but sort of, I guess it just happened naturally, is kind of like composing a song. So, you know, you have your peaks and your troughs and crescendos and things like that. And that's how I always like to try and edit a video, whether it's, you know, a testimonial or talking head, whatever. It needs that pacing and that rhythm. And so making your own music to help that along made a lot of sense to me. And I also, with a passion, hate most of the music you can buy, like, only because, you know, I can't remember what year it was when Kickstarter campaigns got really big, and if you didn't have a mandolin and somebody whistling, it wasn't a real Kickstarter video.
Yeah, you got the ooh-ahs kick claps, stomp claps or whatever.
And they just all sound the same. And I'm like, now it's just got this, like, cheapness to it, you know?
Crank up the stomp clap filter.
Stomp clap.
God, I love me some stomp claps. Get that folky, folky feel to you.
Great video, but can we have more haze in there, please?
Yeah, I can. I sort of feel that because using other songs, you know, whether you're licensing from anywhere, Music Bed, Soundstripe, whatever, if you're taking a song that someone else has made, you never have 100% control over your work.
Yeah.
And I find I'm always slightly altering or heavily altering tracks that I download, taking out certain parts, taking out audio, taking out dialogue, looping things. But having the ability to create your own tracks and create the feel 100% for the piece you're making is amazing. That's
cool. I mean, it's definitely a risk because, you know, like finding the right piece of music for a video can make or break a video, I think.
Yeah.
And for me, I think I'm an extremely empathetic person. So I could really be affected by, you know, what I'm editing, and then that'll affect my mood, and then that will affect what I write, and it may be totally wrong what I'm feeling for the video. And it's also my taste in music, you know. I have to hope that everybody else likes that.
Mm.
But I guess that's the same thing you go through when you're trying to find licensed music as well.
Yeah.
I think that's the constant struggle. Like you, as video editors, we'll look at a video for hours on end and think it's absolutely perfect. And then you send it to a client only to get it picked apart.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Is definitely one of the most heartbreaking and painful experiences in this industry.
100%.
Are there any techniques used to, I guess, you know, help yourself cope with those things?
Alcohol.
Yeah. Keep going.
How much and when?
I think it really depends on what that feedback is.
Yeah.
If it's justified, like, it still hurts, but then I often will, you know, try and get over the pride thing and go, actually, that's a pretty good point. I've, you know, had an oversight there, or, you know, maybe the music is too loud, or maybe it's not right for their audience. Or so if it's constructive feedback that makes sense, I'm all for it, even though it still hurts.
Yeah.
if it's ridiculous things, I don't know, just internalize, get it done, and then probably never work with them again.
and realize that the video will probably only be seen by 30 to 40 people in its entirety.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't really thought about that. It's just, I deal with it when it comes.
I'm just, the only reason I asked is just to steal your ideas. And
some coping mechanisms.
I don't think there's a perfect way.
No.
No.
Yeah,
it's a tough
probably
one.
Probably hurts us all in some way.
You're really putting, like, as a creative, you're really putting part of yourself on the line.
Yeah.
Even if it's a very simple corporate video, there's still a part of you that you're putting into that. And when somebody goes,
there's still creative decisions, and someone says, yeah, your idea is bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no, you know what I find as one of the worst, like, comments of feedback is, it's fine.
Yeah, that hurts.
Because, like, you want it to be good, right? And, and it's absolutely, even on those basic, super basic corporate videos or an event highlight or something like that.
Yeah.
That just, like, it's like a kick in the guts because you're like, you clearly don't care about video to begin with. And I'm doing this for, I've just put all this work in.
You know what I think is, like, one step worse than that is when they say,
it's not fine.
when something isn't fine, but it's just like, oh, can you just make it better? And you're like, what?
Sorry, guys.
What does that mean?
Before I exported the video, I just got to press the better button.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
That is a tough one.
Yeah. You're like, oh, it's not quite there yet.
Oh, yeah.
A bit more, please.
I also, it's really tough when somebody says, I don't like the way I look, and it's somehow your fault. Or the video's fault.
That's how you look.
Yeah.
That's how your voice sounds.
Yeah.
That's just how it was.
That's probably more with photos. It's, you know, oh, can you Photoshop out my double chin? Be like, well, that's not what you look like.
Yeah, I love when you get a Photoshop request for video. You're like, oh, yeah, we'll just Yeah, go consult just, George Lucas's company.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mask out all my blemishes. Yeah.
Take out all my wrinkles. I had that last week. Can you take out all my wrinkles?
Just put the softened filter.
The Cosmo.
Just drag just keep walking back. Yeah. Keep walking back. Yep, can't see your wrinkles.
Yeah.
Gaussian blur plus 100.
Yeah. So, do you compose much for client videos anymore?
When I can, I love to.
Yep.
I think these days, with the type of work I'm doing, it's probably more about sound design rather than music.
Yeah.
I think because a lot of videos are starting to sound the same with the same type of music, I'm trying to differentiate with being a bit more like building soundscapes.
Yeah, nice.
Like that brewery video, the preview for the documentary, I think you saw that. At least half of that is just sound effects and just weird tones and trying to build an atmosphere rather than stomp claps.
Yeah. One stomp clap, yeah. Though.
Man, that's actually a very good point.
Yeah.
Because everyone does generally, I feel like the workflow is often make sure we can hear dialogue.
Yeah.
And then surrounding it, peaks and troughs of music.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah.
There's that missed gap in between. I'm totally guilty of this actually, now I think about it, the majority of my work, because that's just a common thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's actually a really good way to stand out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, like, once you do it and you see, I think it was actually you that really got me started on it when we did that Switch commercial. Because we'd spent so long editing on that.
Yeah.
And I wrote the score for that.
Inspired by
Back
so,
to the Future.
So just before you finish the story, so Nick and I kind of co-shot, directed a commercial which kind of was supposed to serve as like almost like a mix between an explainer video and promo video.
Yeah.
Launch video, basically, for a company, for a product. And it was like just a rip-off of Back to the Future, basically.
Yeah.
But please continue. Yes, definitely better.
I've seen this one, and then Boss Coffee.
We had a space scene as well.
Space and coffee. Yeah, that was a good combo. Yeah.
So that was a really tricky edit as well. That was sort of back and forth between me and you, and then we essentially rewrote the script after we filmed everything,
because
it just wasn't popping.
Yeah.
And then we got a pretty good edit done, but there was just something. There was just something missing, and I think you suggested, you know, it needs sound effects and sort of that was the main thing that drove it all along. And so I think that even made me change the music once I started putting
the sound
effects in.
Yeah, cool.
And it really took it to a whole nother level. And then from there, I've sort of probably more excited about adding sound than music.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And it shows I had one good idea last year. Oh, great.
Hey, you wrote that script as well. Come on. And you directed.
Oh, well, you know, poorly.
Modest.
it came together. It was good.
Modesty is good.
It was good fun.
Yeah.
I'm never going to like what I do.
Yeah, that's all of our curse, I think.
Yeah.
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 So kind of this does bring us to now. One thing I'm interested in hearing about, Nick, because like every now and then we'll touch base and you'll tell me like you're pitching to potentially some big clients. So I don't want to go like too into detail, of course, but it seems like you're getting access, or you're getting to at least be brought to the table from a creative development stage with clients who are looking at whether it's video campaigns, one-off like massive launch videos.
Yep.
You know, what do you feel, or what are you finding happens in those conversations, and how often are you getting to pitch creative ideas to the bigger clients?
Good question. There's a lot of aspects to that, I think. I've had, I don't know if pitch is the right word. There's probably been one or two big pitches this year that were pretty nerve-wracking. So was your question how does that initially come about?
I accidentally asked two questions at yep. once. I'd be interested to know, like, what has been involved in some of those pitches, like what yep. amount of work has gone into it for you, how have you approached it, and yep. how you found, like, what has the reception been when you're pitching more creative work to those clients?
Generally pretty good. There is, let's take the government one, for example. That was potentially a huge campaign. So there was a lot of work that went into that. There was basically, excuse me, I've come to a point where I don't really have to do proposals anymore, because people sort of come to me and just go, let's do a video. How much? And I'm like, yeah, cool. And then we just do it. There's no, this is what you're going to get. This is, you know, what this pays for, yada, yada, yeah. So I've been lucky in that respect. And then I got onto this government job, and it was probably my section in the proposal was about 7 pages. And I'm not good at writing. I'm not good yeah. at T's and C's. I'm not good at cost breakdowns. So that was a lot of work with a lot of procrastination. And then there is a lot of meetings, and it's really nerve-wracking.
Yeah. So as you were going through that process then, were the ideas that you were kind of trying to get the client to latch onto, were they evolving, or was it always this constant, I've got an idea for you, I've got a concept, let's push towards that, how do we fit that around?
Yeah, well, for that specific job, they were evolving, but it was pretty constant because of what the end product had to be.
Yeah.
But it was also the time constraints. So I wasn't necessarily putting forward anything creative. It was okay. more around problem solving. So, you know, how are we going to shoot this many kids? We spoke about this, you know, in a week, or, you know, how can we actually build this much content in 2 months?
Yeah.
And so it was more about coming up with solutions for how we would achieve that and achieve that well. That one wasn't necessarily very creative. And then there's a lot of back and forth with, you know, actors, real people, all that sort of stuff. That was a big learning curve, that one. That was probably the biggest one so far.
There is a lot of problem solving in filmmaking a lot, which is some of the most headache-inducing parts of this job. But now that we're like sort of on the tail end of this podcast, I just wanted to ask, and we asked last week's guest too, is there, speaking creatively now, is there one project that you've always really wanted to do or wanted to do in the past that is your white whale that you just haven't had the chance to tackle yet?
I don't know if there's one specifically. I think there's probably a genre that I'd like to explore, which we're hopefully going to start doing next year, is commercials, getting into proper creative commercial work. We're probably going to start with some spec ads next year.
Very nice. So bigger and better ads. Sort of where would you see them going?
I think we'd probably, the direction we take is for television, even though television's kind of dying.
Yeah.
I think there's still a place for that. And then trying to make a campaign that would, I guess, be multi-purpose. So it would work for TV, would work for social, would work for maybe cinema. No, probably not. And just have fun with it, and, you know, take a few risks. And there's some great commercials out there, but I feel like it's kind of plateaued recently, and TV doesn't get the same attention or budget that it used to. It'd be nice to sort of take that old TV approach and put that towards social media and do something like that, because the videos you see on
Facebook. Well, I think more businesses and corporations are realizing that social's where it's at. So
yeah.
I think there is more money going into that space. Mm. It's just a matter of time.
Mm.
And yeah,
for sure.
Hope you get to achieve that.
if yeah, we'll make a spec at least. That'll be fun.
And I guess like final question from ultimate goal for yourself. Do you see yourself as being director of photography somewhere, cinematographer, just shooting and directing your own stuff, directing commercials? What's the ultimate goal for you?
Great question. I think right now, for what I can see right now, is hopefully DOP / kind of director, but not really, of doco work, commercials, and maybe some music videos. But probably what I've learned this year is docos are amazing, and they're the people you meet and what you learn is really fun and really fulfilling. But I also really want to get into the advertising, so probably DOP would be my goal.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I actually wanted to throw that question back on you guys. Okay. Is when you get into, I think a lot of people when they get into videographer, they have the dream of being a director. But I'm wondering if videography is the right path to take to becoming a director. And where do you guys want to go?
It's a tricky one. It's a very philosophical question.
So I have an immediate answer.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to think about yours, Sean, but I think the answer is no, but yes. No, it's if you want to be a director of films, go and do that.
Yeah.
Even if you don't get paid for 10 years, find some other way to save your money and go and make feature films whatever you want to do, because it is, we all know, getting into freelancer mode, because that's where we think we have to go to then become filmmaker or make stuff with narrative or stuff that involves cinematography. We think it's definitely, I can't be salaried as a videographer shooting the same events or whatever.
Yeah.
I need to go out there and create my own work. But what often happens, you get the money coming in from the clients who want same old, and it's not really like scratching that itch, or it's not pushing you in that direction.
Yeah.
So videography traditionally is a no, but it is, I think, changing a little bit in that now we, the video producers, are getting to work on more creative material, and actually we're traditionally like, we wouldn't be able to make a TV ad or a TV commercial or commercial that is seen in the cinemas because that would go through agencies who would then go on to like proper directors and crewed and things like that. But budgets now do dictate that you can't always afford full film crews. And so where do they go next? They go to that next kind of tier, which is probably where we sit. And so you do get to be more creative that way. But I think ultimately, I mean, if you do well, you can afford 8 weeks off a year to go and do your own projects, then great. But I find it's probably a no overall.
Yeah, it's, I find for myself at least, it's very easy to get caught up in paid videography work. And I say that in quotations. I think that it's very different videography compared to filmmaking.
Yeah.
My goal always from the start was to make time travel films.
Cool.
Just films about time travel. It's a subject I like.
Coming at you.
Yeah.
And narrative has always been my love, but over the years I've lost my way.
Yeah.
It's only been this year since I've realized sort of where my path has led me. So I have to consciously, you know, steer myself into another direction to go where I want to go. So it's been a hard mental struggle. But having to say no to a lot of projects sometimes to achieve that, I think, is the way.
Yeah.
And so it's something you have to consciously attack.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
To get to where you want to go.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, on that very deep note, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Is there anywhere that you'd want to send people who might want to look at your showreel or stuff?
Probably my Instagram, I'd say. Okay. I think it's
I'll put a link in the show notes so you can find Nick really easy. Hit him up on Instagram. He's a lovely chap. Lovely to talk to.
If I'm in a good mood.
Which is every day.
Don't
He's
DM
being
it.
Very sarcastic. Just not before his alcohol.
Exactly. Just so the coffee or alcohol.
But yeah, man, that was great.
Thanks for having me. That was awesome.
If you did enjoy this episode of In Focus Out of Touch, I want you to do two things for me, okay? For us, for Sean and I. Number one, subscribe. If you're listening to this on a podcast or watching a YouTube channel, please subscribe and give us a rating and review. It really would help get the message out there of the podcast so we can get more and more video producers kicking goals onto the podcast. So please give us a rating and review.
Very nice. If you want to email us anything, infocusoutoftouch@gmail.com. Anything at all. So that's
please, somebody.
No. That's,
please, somebody talk to me.
Sean, you can check that email. I don't want to see what comes in.
I'll check it.
Bye bye.
See ya.
Bye.